Okay, good evening, everyone. Tonight's learning is dedicated to Le'ilui Nishmas Meir Ben Kalman. Tonight we have the privilege of studying together Parshas Pinchas, one of the more complicated, in my opinion, Parshas to go through because there's so much here, so much material, so much information, so many lessons for us to glean from this week's Parsha, and even more so, as we'll see, Blue Nether, as the night goes on, much is to learn and connect to the time where we find ourselves. We're in the beginning of the Bein HaMitzarim. In the beginning of the 3 weeks, we're focusing on Chorban Beis HaMikdash, as well as focusing on relationship building, on bringing Klal Yisrael back together, unifying Klal Yisrael from the Chorban Bayis Sheni. So just a quick overview of what to expect in Parashas Pinchas. So the beginning of the parasha talks about the famous story of Pinchas killing two people and his reward, his gift that Hashem gives him, his prize reward for what he did. After that, the Torah counts the Jewish people, gives us a census of the Jewish people. The middle, before that, I correct myself, the Torah reminds us that we have a prohibition of what we're allowed to do and not allowed to do to the Midianites. Sores and Midianim, we're only allowed to cause pain to them, but we're not allowed to kill them. And then the Torah gives us a census of the Jewish people. Then we have the famous story of the Bnei Tzlochar, who I would like to get to this evening, where the Torah describes the mitzvah, or the idea of dividing up Eretz Yisrael, who gets what in Eretz Yisrael, and the idea of the daughters of Tzlochot, really some terrific, amazing daughters that Tzlochot had, who came to Moshe Rabbeinu with a claim, with almost a demand that they want to get land as well in Eretz Yisrael, and what their responsa was from Moshe Rabbeinu. Then the Torah tells us about the appointing of the future leadership of the Bnei Yisrael, who is ultimately going to take over Moshe Rabbeinu. We're holding now year 40 in the Midbar. Moshe Rabbeinu knows he's not going to be the ultimate leader into Eretz Yisrael. Who's going to take over the Jewish people? And we learn about Yeshua's future role in leadership. Then the end of the parasha talks about the Karban Tamid, which is extremely relevant to the time where we find ourselves, because as we know, on Shavuos Batamos, the Karban Tamid was stopped, was not allowed to be brought anymore. So there's a direct correlation right there. And then the Torah reminds us of the Karbanos that are brought on Shabbos and on the Mayadim, and that's really the end of Parshas Pinchas. The Torah reminds us of the Mayadim and the Karbanos that are brought on each respective Yom Tov, as well as on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. That's an overview of Parshas Pinchas. I guess we'll go a little bit backwards and then we'll go a little forward. It's interesting that they bring down B'Shem the B'nai Yisaschar, who points out that these parashas are read specifically during this time, because this week's parasha talks significantly about Chalukas Eretz Yisrael. It talks about the love of Eretz Yisrael, how much Bnei Slavcha loved Eretz Yisrael, and how much Klal Yisrael will get in Eretz Yisrael. This week's parasha is all about Eretz Yisrael, because we are mourning the loss of Eretz Yisrael, the lack of Eretz Yisrael. And I would take it a step further. If you look at the end of the parasha, the end of the parasha talks about the Karbanos of Yom Tov. So we all know about Yom Tov because in Parashas Emor the Torah tells us about Yom Tov. But what's unique about Yom Tov in the end of this week's parasha is the Torah talks about the Karbanos that are brought on Yom Tov. That's the part of Yom Tov that we don't get to commemorate today. Yes, we still have Mitzvahs Matzah today and we still have Isser Malacha today. That we all have even without a Beis HaMikdash. What's unique about this week's parasha, where the Torah describes the Mayadim, but it's not just the Mayadim, it's the Mayadim and their relationship to their Karbanos, and that we don't have today. And maybe that's why we read it specifically during the 3 weeks to remind us that every Yom Tov that we celebrate, that we enjoy, it's only slightly missing, it's half-baked, because we're still missing the Karbanos element. And that's what we reflect on in this week's parasha. We reflect on the loss of Karbanos. We reflect on the fact that, yes, we're lucky enough to have Mayadim, and we get to celebrate the Mayadim, and we have to do the mitzvahs on Mayadim, but we don't have the complete version of the Mayadim because we are lacking the Karbanos, which will only be given to us when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. So right away, we immediately find a connection, a relevancy to the time of the year where we find ourselves, as well as the Parshas HaShavua. They say over a story with the Hafla. The Hafla was Rav Pinchas Levi Ish Horowitz. He was the famed Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer. He was really the Rav of the town where the Chassam Sofer lived in Germany. So they say over a cute verb that Rav Pinchas Horowitz, his name was Pinchas. So he points out that that whenever he used to go to other towns, he would travel out of his local town, he would always be very much received with a lot of honor and respect. But in his own town, the people didn't treat him so well. So we all know that that's sometimes a common theme for Rabbanim. In their own shul, the people don't appreciate them. They don't value them. They go to other shuls. They go to other towns. They go visiting. Then everyone appreciates him. So the Haflah said, jokingly, he said his name is Pinchas. He says, Parashas Pinchas is almost always read during the 3 weeks, which is not so a gishmak of time. But when we read Parashas Pinchas, let's say on Rosh Chodesh or on Yom Tov, then it's very much alike. So he says that when Pinchas is not in his regular place, he's read on a Yom Tov, he's read on a Rosh Chodesh, everyone is so besimcha. But when Pinchas is read in Bim Kaimoy, in his place, like during the 3 weeks, not everyone is so happy. So it's a similar idea. He said that's why when he goes traveling, he doesn't get the same recognition he gets when he's in his hometown. Just like when Parshas Pinchas is read in its own place, meaning Parshas HaShavuot is usually during the 3 weeks. But when it's read on Mayadin, and when it's read on Rosh Chodesh, that's out of its spot, that's always, it gets much more received much better. Okay, but nonetheless, in this week's parasha, we do have the Karbanos of the Mayadim, and we also have the Karban Tamid. So maybe we'll just talk a little bit about the significance of the Karban Tamid. We all know that on Shavuos B'Tammuz, one of the things that we commemorate is five, Mishnah tells us in Masechet Tainis, five things happened on Shavuos B'Tammuz, and one of them was Batal HaTamid. We lost the Karban Tamid. And this week's parasha, we have the description of the Karban Tamid. And the kasha is asked by many, why does the Karban Tamid stand out from all the Karbanos that we lost? If you actually look in the Slichas that we said in Shavuos B'Tammuz, we reflect all of the Karbanos that we lost, which is why some people have a practice in Rishonim. It's recorded such a practice, it's not widely accepted la'halacha, but in Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch even mentioned such an opinion, that already starting from Shavuos B'Tammuz, we stop having Basa V'Yayin. Why would we stop having Basa V'Yayin already from Shavuos B'Tammuz? Because the Karbanos were not brought. And since HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't get his meat in Yayin, we don't have our meat in Yayin. So really all the Karbanos were stopped around this time, not only the Karban Tamid. So why do we highlight the Karban Tamid? So many terutzim are given. One answer, which I think is the most relevant to that time, is that the Karban Tamid was a very unifying Karban. The Karban Tamid was a Karban that was brought behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, for all of Klal Yisrael. Karban Tamid was the epitome of Achdus and Klal Yisrael. So we're commemorating the fact that the Achdus Dika Karban, that unifying Karban that was for all of us, that was stopped at this time of the year, and that's what we're reflecting on Shavuos B'Tammuz. And that's what we're being exposed to in this week's parasha, the beauty of the Karban Tamid, that the Karban Tamid was not just a personal Karban for one individual, for one group, but rather was a Karban for all of Klal Yisrael, which is obviously something that brings out the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, something that we're struggling with this time of the year to work on, to focus on, and to improve. What's also interesting about the Karban Tamid is the fact that the Karban Tamid was Tamid, it was constant. The beauty of the Karban Tamid was that it never missed a day. Every single day, no matter what was going on in the Jewish calendar, the Karban Tamid was brought twice, Karban Tamid Shal Shachar, Karban Tamid Shal Ben Arbayim. It was the consistency that was so much beloved in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because as we know, one thing that is so special in Judaism is consistency. A person has to do everything every day. Not when I'm in the mood, not on the weekends, not every other week. A person has to be in Oyved Hashem every single day. And that was one of the reasons why Rav Meir Shapiro's Daf Yomi idea is so popular today, because it's consistent. It means every single day you have to learn, every single day you have to do the daf. If I can quote Rabbi Stefanski, it's not about the daf, it's about the yomi. It's an interesting vart. I heard him say this in the beginning of one of his shurim. It's not about the daf, it's about the yomi. What does that mean? What I think he means is it's about the consistency. Every day a person has to learn, no matter what is going on, no matter how tired he is, no matter how stressed he is, no matter how busy he is, every Jew has to find time for learning. That's really what we find. Gemara tells us that Kashbarak was going to ask us, Achameh Vesim, one of the questions we're going to be asked was, Kavata Itim L'Torah. Did you establish time for learning? It's about the consistency, the establishment of time. Blocking off a time of your day, every day, whenever it be, whether it be morning, night, afternoon, or all of the above, whatever works out in your schedule, there has to be a set time that is untouchable, that is my time for learning, that's when I get my Kavias Itim in, and that's really the idea of the Karban Tamid. It's the consistency, day in, day out, no matter what is going on, no matter how, whatever else is going on in the calendar and the schedule, that Karban is not missed. But the Befarshim point out another interesting observation about the Karban Tamid. The Pasuk says, about the Karban Tamid, it says, Pasuk says that I want you to bring the Karban Tamid. Last Tamid Hasuyu Bahar Sinai. Just like Hasuyu Bahar Sinai. Why is the Karban Tamid tracked back to Har Sinai? So the Mefarshim point out that anything that's done consistently eventually becomes somewhat boring. We all know any mitzvah that we do day after day, day after day, at some point we lose excitement, we lose chidush in it. It doesn't have that same excitement as a mitzvah you do once a year. A mitzvah you do once a year, every 6 months, you're excited about it. Tefillin, we do every single day. Eventually, it starts to lose the same excitement. So we have to remind ourselves, ha'asuyah har sina. We have to, when we do the carbon tumid, even though it's so consistent day after day, we have to try to find ways of finding it, reminding us the way it was at Sinai. Just like when we got it at Sinai, we were so excited, it was fresh, it was new, it was wonderful. So to all the mitzvahs that we do that are very consistent, we need to find ways to make them exciting, we need to find ways to make them fresh, we need to find ways to make sure they don't get stale and chas v'shalom bored of them. We'll make one more ha'ara on the end of the parsha, and b'lineda we will work ourselves to the beginning of the parsha. When it comes to the carbon of Rosh Hashanah, there's an interesting pasuk over here. The Torah says, when it talks about the carbon that you bring on Rosh Hashanah, the pasuk says, v'asisem, you should make. All the other places, the Torah says, v'hikraftem, and you should offer, you should bring. Why v'asisem? So the Mepharshim point out, the v'asisem over here is not just bringing a carbon, it's v'asisem, means you have to change yourself. A person comes to Rosh Hashanah, it's a time where he changes. I know we're not far off from Rosh Hashanah already. It's around the corner, believe it or not. And therefore, when we think about Rosh Hashanah, it says the pasuk v'asisem, you have to make yourself into a better person. It's not just bringing a carbon, it's the changing of you that is part and parcel of the Rosh Hashanah experience. New year, new beginning, new us. We are a new person, we are made again, we have new chances, new potential, new availabilities and capabilities, and we're not bound by last year's activities. Okay, that's what you should and can expect from the second half of the parsha. Now let's jump back to the beginning of the parsha. Now if one would open up a Chumash, Parshas Pinchas, and start reading the beginning of Parshas Pinchas without reading last week's parsha, in my humble opinion, he would be significantly confused and very much at a loss of what is going on. Parshas Pinchas opens up with the follow-up or the response to what happened at the end of Parshas Balak. But if you don't know what happened in Parshas Balak, then you'll be very confused when you get to Parshas Pinchas. So let's just spend a little bit of time. I don't want to spend too much time. I think in other years we spent much more time on this, where I just want to talk very quickly. We are all familiar with the story at the end of Parshas Balak. The end of Parshas Balak, after the Midyanim gave up hope, or the Mayavim for that matter, gave up hope on being able to attack the Jewish people straight on, they came up with a new solution. The best way to attack the Jewish people is to cause them to sin. The Jewish people have a protection. We have a special defense against all our enemies, as long as we are keeping the Torah and we're keeping our end of the deal. The moment we start to stray and sway from Torah mitzvahs, that's when our enemies can attack us. So therefore, they came up with this ingenious plan to have the Jewish people sin. And if you look through the psukim at the end of the parasha, it's not clear what was their main motivation. And this, I think we spoke about in previous years. You could take a listen if you choose to, where the Torah is not clear what was the major impetus to get the Jewish people to sin. Was it getting them to do Baal Par, which is really a ridiculous and so animalistic type of Avodah Zarah? Or did they really want to get the Jewish people to live with the Mayavi girls? What was really the push over here? Either way, they did both. And the Torah tells us that there was a terrible plague. There was a plague that hit the Jewish people where 24,000 Jews died. Amish, a horrific plague that affected the Jewish people. And the Torah ends off in Parshas Balak telling us not only of the Jewish people dying, but a great person. Even though actually in the end of Parshas Balak, we don't know his name. Just we know there was an Ish b'nei Yisrael. There was a man from the Jewish people. He came to one of the Midianite girls and he lived with her. And that's really what the Torah tells us. We don't know who he was, and we don't know who she was. And Blineda will see why their names are so hidden in last week's parasha. Yet in this week's parasha, their entire background is clearly told to us. And here's the kicker of the end of the parasha. We're told about a very special Yid named Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKoyen. He takes a roimach biyodai. He gets up and he takes a spear and he attacks them. He kills them both. And the Magefa comes to a close. Magefa ends with the killing of this Nasi, a leader from Shevet Shimon, and a Midianite Mayavi princess, and the plague comes to an end. However, the pasuk does conclude that in the plague there was 24,000 people lost. And it's interesting, usually the Chumash doesn't end on such a low, depressing note, like 24,000 dying people, that's very depressing. But the Torah does end over here, even though some Kehillas have a practice, they don't end Parshas Balak over here, they actually continue reading a few psukim into Parshas Pinchas. But the way we have it, and most of our traditions are, that we end the Chumash with this story, 24,000 people dying, and it seems to be a very terrible tragedy. But the question that really needs explanation is, what caused this tragedy? What was the sin that really caused this terrible, terrible pandemic where 24,000 people died? So the Nesiv HaShalom, the Slan Rebbe, is a very, very important piece. To me, it's one of my top five pieces of Nesiv HaShalom, of Slan HaTorah, is in the Parashas Balak, or really beginning of Parashas Pinchas. It says in Nesiv HaShalom, a Yisoid Gadol, which is something we have to remind ourselves for life, and it's very much relevant to the times where we find ourselves. The Slan Rebbe makes the following observation. Which was really the sin that really created the anger by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We know in the beginning of the Parsha, it's going to tell us that Hashem was so angry, that Pinchas was able to calm HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger. What was Hashem's anger caused by? So the Slan Rebbe asks, was it the worshipping of the Baal Par, or was it the living with Mayavi girls? What was it that got Hashem so upset that he killed 24,000 people, and it was only comforted when Pinchas killed Zimri and Cusbi? What was really bothering Hashem? So the Slan Rebbe makes a very fair cheshbon. He says, let's think about it. Avodah Zarah is a terrible avera. Top three, Yarek Valyaver, so it's probably Avodah Zarah. What's the other avera? Living with a non-Jewish woman. Points out the Slan Rebbe, what avera do you violate on the books if you live with a non-Jewish woman? If you go through all the Chumash, you'll see there absolutely is no pasuk in the Chumash where the Torah gives us the capital punishment for living with a non-Jewish woman, because there is no capital punishment for living with a non-Jewish woman. The punishment is kenayim paigim bayi. If someone happens to catch you in the act, they can kill you. However, there is no crime or even violation on the books in the Chumash for living with a non-Jewish woman. Therefore, says the Slan Rebbe, if you had to pick which one would cause Hashem's wrath, it would have to be the Avodah Zarah. However, says the Slan Rebbe, that is not the case. Says the Slan Rebbe, you have to ask yourself, what will make Hashem angry and what will make Hashem happy? Says the Slan Rebbe, the question over here is not what does it say on the books, but what causes Hashem terrible agmas nefesh, and what causes Hashem wonderful machas ruach? Says the Slan Rebbe, an amazing insight. Maybe on the books, living with a non-Jewish woman is not as usur or as strongly punished as it is to do avodah zarah, but what causes Hashem more anguish and pain is living with a non-Jewish woman. Says the Slan Rebbe, I'll bring you a ride to this concept. It's a beautiful, beautiful point. Says the Slan Rebbe, what is the avera of not getting along with another Jew? What's the avera of sinas chinam? On the books, show me. The guy comes to you and says, you know what? The Gemara tells us in Yuma Bayi Sheni was Necher because of sinas chinam. How bad is the avera? So you look through the Chumash, and you'll find the pasuk. It says in the Chumash, you're not allowed to hate your brother in your heart. Says the Slan Rebbe, you know you don't get malchus for hating your brother? You don't even get whipped in Bezdin. You know why? Because it's a lav shein bei ma'isa. There's no action involved. It's passive. It's just thoughts. There's no action. So frek the Slan Rebbe, kasha, I don't understand. How could it be? Bayis Rishon was brought down because Klai Yisrael did the three cardinal sins. And Bayis Rishon was ultimately rebuilt. Bayis Sheni was still sitting in its destruction because of what? Because you violated a lav shein bei ma'isa. When you learn Gemara and you come across a lav shein bei ma'isa, you say to yourself, how strict can it be? You don't even get malchus. Says the Slan Rebbe, a beautiful concept that we have to remind ourselves. Yes, maybe on the books, it's not as severe as other lavim, but this is something that causes Hashem terrible pain and discomfort. Therefore, says the Slan Rebbe, that's the yardstick that you should be measuring averus. Not only by what it says in the Chumash, by what brings Hashem joy, and lahepach, what brings Hashem terrible anger and sadness. Therefore, says the Slan Rebbe, sinas chinam, although maybe for whatever reason on the books is not such a punishable crime, but it's something that tears at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something that causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu terrible pain and anguish, and he can't let it go so fast. And until we fix it, we're going to be in a state of chorban. Therefore, he explains here also, even though maybe on the books the sin of living with a non-Jewish woman is not as severe as other averus, but it's something that is so despised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it can even cause 24,000 people to die from such a avera. So Pinchas did an amazing thing. Pinchas was able to calm the anger, the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately end the plague. And really, really, by doing so, he saved many, many people's many people's lives. The Brisker Rav says over an interesting concept in the name of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Usually when the Brisker Rav quotes the Reb Chaim, you're assuming he's quoting the Tate, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. But it quotes from Chaim Volozhin something very interesting, and it's somewhat meduik in the Pesukim. So if you look in the Pasuk, it says, Vateyotar Magefa Ma'al B'nei Yisrael. The Magefa stopped from amongst the Jewish people. Vayu Amesim Magefa, and how many people died? 24,000. So Chaim Volozhin has said that really, that number of 24,000 was much more than just the people that deserved to die. Meaning, there were people that it was their time to go anyways. They also were counting the 24,000. So Chaim Volozhin was saying that really, Hashem had this number, 24,000. So it wasn't only people that were dying because of the sin. There were people that it was their time to go also. And that's where Vayu HaMesim HaMageif means the sum total of people who died. Not only those people that died b'chetoy, which is an interesting pshat, it means that there were people that died during this time, even though maybe it wasn't because of the chet, it was their time to go. But they were also included in the number of 24,000 of the people that died. So now we're going to open up with that backdrop. So what happened at the end of the parasha? At the end of the parasha, Pinchas watches, as well as the rest of the Jewish population. They have to picture this. Don't picture it too vividly because it can get a little not so good. Right, we're talking about a Nasi from Shevet Shimon, a great leader. The tribal leader is living with a Mayavi girl. Pinchas walks by and he watches this. He wasn't the only person to see it. Everyone watched it. And he decides to do something about it. He takes a spear and he kills both of them. Kills them both. That's the end of Parshas Balak. Now there's a famous question. We spoke about it in other years. It's kedai just to mention it. Why did she deserve to get killed? I understand that you were allowed to kill Pinchas. Pinchas was allowed to kill Zimri under the principle of Kanayim Paigimah. But what right did you have to kill her? She wasn't Jewish. She didn't deserve to be killed. So under what right did he have to kill Kozbi Bastzor? The Arachayim HaKadosh asks this kasha, I believe, in the end of last week's parasha. Or in this week's parasha, I don't remember. And he gives an interesting answer. He writes, what did she do wrong? So first he suggests maybe she was an Eishes Ish. Maybe she was also married. And since she was also married, that's why she deserved to be killed. But he says, we don't know that in the Pasuk. It doesn't say that in the Pasuk. So he says something which is really found in the Rambam. The Rambam writes that when an animal lives with a person, bestiality, last week's parasha, when Balaam lived with his donkey, so the halach is he killed the person and the animal. Why do you kill the animal? So the Rambam writes, because since this animal was used to cause a person to sin, the animal goes also. So the Rechaim HaKadosh writes here also, since the Isha was used as a takala, she brought down the man, she also gets killed. So that's why she deserved to be killed as well. So Brisker Rav makes a whole lumdish shtickel out of this. I definitely think we spoke about it in previous years. I don't want to get bogged down. That Pinchas died because of Kenayim Paigimba. She died for a different reason. She died because of what's called a takala. She caused a Jew to sin, so therefore she died. And there's a difference between these two. Kanayim Poikimba is only Bishas Maisa, but she could be killed even later because she was not because of Kanayim Poikimba, she was because of a different reason. So this is the backdrop of the opening Pasuk. Now it's interesting, Reb David Feinstein Zatzal makes an interesting observation on the Pasuk. Vayikach Reimach B'yodai. He took a spear in his hand. So Reb David Feinstein points out, he says, do you think Pinchas was familiar with a spear? Lahavdil, let's say a person, you know, sees something and he grabs a gun and shoots it. So, you know, in the movies it makes it look like it's everything's so easy. It's not very easy to shoot a gun. If you're not naturally accustomed to using a gun, you probably wouldn't know what to do. So, points out Reb David Feinstein, Vayikach Reimach B'yodai, it wasn't natural for Pinchas to kill. Pinchas wasn't a killer. He was a kohen. Okay, we'll talk about his kahuna a little later. But he wasn't a killer. He didn't go around killing people. So the pasuk makes it sound like it was so natural for him. So David Feinstein says, yeah, it was natural for him. You know why? Because he was doing it completely Shem Shemaim. Since he wasn't thinking about himself, it wasn't about his glory, his honor, it was completely Lishma, it was all about Hashem, it became more natural for him because he wasn't doing it for himself. And with that backdrop, with that Hakdama, which took a little longer than I would have liked it to, we open up this week's parsha. What's this week's parsha? Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lehem. Hashem speaks to Moshe. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKoyim. This fellow named Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKoyim. Also now we have to know his pedigree. We have to know who his father was and who his grandfather was. Heishivis chamosimi al b'nei Yisrael. He returned. He calmed my anger from the Jewish people. B'kanoyis kinasi, when he avenged my vengeance. V'lechilisi es b'nei Yisrael b'kinasi. I did not destroy the Jewish people out of my anger. L'chein, therefore, and more, I'm saying, I'm going to give him the gift of peace. And I'm going to give him forever, ever the ability to be the Kayin. He's going to be Kayin forever. So there's so much to talk about on these two opening psukim. We'll try to get to as much as we possibly can. So Rashi already quotes from the Medrash, why did the Torah feel the urge, the need to tell me Pinchas' background? We know Pinchas is. The Torah told us in the end of Parshas Balak. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKayin. But why is it relevant for us to know who he was? meaning we know who he was. He was a warrior, a hero. Who cares who his grandfather was? Rashi tells us, the Shvatim would make fun of Pinchas. Hari Yisem ben Puti Zeh, Shepitim Avi'imai Agolim Avodis Gechavim. They say, this Pinchas, a chutzpah. Who does he think he is to go around and kill Shimon? He killed a Nasi from Shevet Shimon. Who is he? His grandfather used to fatten up Avodah Zarah. Who's his grandfather? From his mother's side. His mother was a daughter by Yisrael. So Yisrael wasn't Oyvid Avodah Zarah. So therefore says the Pasuk, V'harag Nasi Shevet Yisrael, ha-chutzpah. Who are you? You think you have the right to go around killing our leader? You're a nobody. Your Zayda was an Oyvid Avodah Zarah. Says Rashi, L'fichach ba'a kosev yichase achar arim. Therefore, the Torah went out of its way to say, no, not so fast. That may be true on his mother's side. But look about his father's side. On his father's side, he was a ben Acha ben from Aaron Akkai. So there's so much to talk about in this Rashi with this Medrash, so much going on over here. So first of all, the Kliyakar makes a beautiful pshat that I think we all need to live by. The Kliyakar says, you know what the pshat in the Torah's Yichas is? The Torah's Yichas is teaching us the following. That Pinchas could have said to himself, too risky. I'm not getting involved. I have too much to lose. You know, if I'm going to get involved, someone's going to bring up my grandfather on my mother's side. I don't need it. I'm not interested. I'm going to sit on the sidelines and not get involved. Says the Kliyakar, Pinchas, the Torah is telling us that Pinchas had the biggest reason in the world not to get involved. It's beautiful. He writes, he was Ben Elazar. Ben Elazar means his father was Elazar who married Yisrael's daughter equals being a grandson of an Oyvid Avodah Zarah. He writes, he should have refrained from getting involved. Because you know what? Pinchas could have thought in his mind, why do I need the hassle? I'm going to do it, and everyone's going to jump on my back. Right? So, therefore says, listen to the Kliyakar. Not only will they have tainus on him from his mother's side, they're going to have tainus on him from his father's side. Why? Because the Zaydah's given involved in the eagle. Says the Kliyakar, Pinchas did not say that because of this I'm not going to get involved. Why? Because Pinchas did what is right, and you don't listen to the naysayers. This Kliyakar is to me such a beautiful message. So often in life, people say to themselves, I'm not going to get involved. It's not worth it. Because they're going to run my name through the mud. And they're going to make fun of me. And they're going to bring me down. And I don't need it. Says the Kliyakar, Pinchas said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do what's right despite the naysayers and despite all the pushback I'm going to get, despite all the negative things I'm going to hear. I don't care. I'm going to do what's right. And that's all that matters. A very important lesson for life. So the Kliyakar flips the whole idea. He learns the pasuk wasn't about what the Shvatim were going to say. On the contrary, it was running through Pinchas' mind. Pinchas was thinking to himself, should I really do this? Is this worth it for me? Is it worth all the pushback? And he decided to go for it. He decided to do it. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says a different shot. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says what the Shvatim were going to get at, meaning what their claim was going to be, is like this. Listen, Pinchas, you're not a warrior, you're not a hero, but you know who you are? You come from Goyim. You know, you're a Kassin. You're angry. Yeah, you have a lot of anger to deal with. So this wasn't Lishma. Don't tell me this was Lishma. This was because you are a Kassin and you wanted to get your anger out and you wanted to let loose, and this was a heter dika way of doing it. Therefore, says Rabbi, the Torah reminds us, Ben Aaron HaKoyin. No. He comes from Aaron HaKoyin. Aaron HaKoyin doesn't work that way. Aaron HaKoyin was an Oyev Shalom. He loved every Jew. He wouldn't kill someone because of anger reasons. He wouldn't kill someone because he didn't like him. No, he loved every Jew like his Zayda, and therefore this came completely Lishma. The Satmar Rebbe has a different pshat in this whole story over here. Beautiful pshat from the Satmar Rebbe. Says the Satmar Rebbe, we know that Pinchas, the Gemara tells us, Pinchas put himself in significant danger by doing what he did. He could have easily been killed, and we actually learned in our Sunday morning share that if I always get confused between Zimri and Cosby, if he would have turned around and killed him, he would have been potter. If Zimri would have killed Pinchas, Zimri would have been potter because he was a raidif. Pinchas was a raidif. So therefore, says the Satmar Rebbe, the Gemara says that Pinchas put himself in terrible danger. Says the Satmar Rebbe like this. The Gemara says that when a person puts himself in danger, the thing that saves him is chosavis. It's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara said, when a person puts himself in danger, what's going to get him out of that danger? Not his own schusim. Schusav is his grandparents, his great-grandparents, all that. Deva says this on the Rebbe, that's why the Torah tells us his yichus. The Torah tells us yichus because that was his ticket out of the sakana. The reason why Pinchas survived and was not killed and not wasn't killed by himself, wasn't killed, was because he's ben Alozer, ben Aaron HaKoyin, he has yichus. I think one of the underlining themes in this week's parasha, and we'll try to bring it out a little bit more, is the important role of family. Again, we don't yichus is not the beginning, end, and all of life. But there is something to be said when people can go back and look back at the previous generations and what they did and what they gave and the path that they worked on for us. So here also says the Sanhedrin, but that Aaron HaKohen, that yichus that he had, was what saved him from the sakana. That's what saved him from being attacked and ultimately living and being able to survive. It's interesting that Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, the Mir Mashkiach, points out that if you look at the Psukim, it never ever talks about the danger that Pinchas was in. It's never discussed. The Torah doesn't say, and Pinchas could have got killed, and he saved himself, and he didn't die. It's never discussed. It's not about Pinchas. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein says, because it's not about Pinchas. It was always about Hashem. Pinchas never thought about his life. He never thought about the danger he's putting himself in. You speak to people who work in the line of danger. They don't think about it because they're not acting for themselves. They're acting for someone else. So Pinchas was never thinking about the I, my danger, my life. He just did it. Similar to what the Kliyaka was telling us, that he didn't think about, oh no, what are people going to say about me? Because it's not about me. When a person does something with Shem Shemayim, there's no I in the equation. There's no, oh, how am I going to be affected? What's my family going to do? It's not about the me, it's about them. It's about how am I going to help Christ, or how am I going to avenge the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, because it was completely and wholesomely only about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no mention, no reference, b'chlal at all, about what where he stood to stand to gain or to potentially lose. It was never about Pinchas, it was always about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory. The story goes that the Bris Kerov was once at a Sheva Brachas, at a Bris, and a fellow got up and said, you know, because Pinchas was such a kanoi, that's why he was never made to be a manik. Pinchas was never a leader, because a leader can't be a kanoi. And the Bris Kerov heard this, he was very upset. He said, where did it say that? So some people say over this idea that the reason why Pinchas was never a manik is because a manik can't be a kanoi. A kanoi is a very difficult job. To be a kanoi, you have to walk a very, very thin line. Because the whole halacha is such a strange halacha. Wherever do we find the halacha is based on the premise of vigilante. You see it, do something. What do you mean? Everything else, you see it, you bring it to Beis Din. You give hasara, you go to Beis Din. Wherever do you find such a concept, you see a guy living with a non-Jewish kohen, you shoot him. Such a strange thing, the whole thing of Kanaim Poigimba is so strange. However, Rabbi Shawai points out, based on Rashi and Sanhedrin, Rashi that they write, Kanaim Poigimba is not for the faint of heart. It's not for every Tom, Dick, and Harry walking down the street. It's for ksheru. People that are at a madrega where they can live a life where they're completely not thinking about, oh, by the way, I don't like that guy, now's a chance for me to kill him. Or, by the way, I want to try my new gun on someone. Oh, good, I can kill the guy who's living with the guy. It has to be completely, completely lishma. It's all about the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor. It's not about me. Very hard thing to do. Everyone likes to be a kanoi and everyone likes to be lishma, but it's very, very difficult to be a kanoi lishma. It's not an easy job and it's not for everyone. And therefore, many people talk to say, that's why he couldn't be a leader. A leader can't be like that. A leader has to be sometimes a little bit more understanding, a little bit more manageable with the people. And really, we find that contrast in this week's parasha. Because in the middle of the parasha, they talk about who's going to be the Jewish leader. And it's Yeshua ben Nun. And Yeshua ben Nun wasn't the biggest Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu in Torah-wise. He was the closest to Moshe Rabbeinu in relationship, but not in Torah. It's a very interesting thing. If there's time, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Moshe, about why Yeshua was chosen for his job, for his position. But in any case, Pinchas was not chosen to be a leader, even though he did a very heroic and a really amazing thing, because at the end of the day, maybe that doesn't make for the leaders that we need. Now, it's an interesting halacha. It needs, again, I'm not here to explain it, but the whole idea of Kanoim Poigimba, that you have the right to catch someone in the act and to kill them, is really a phenomenon we don't find anywhere else. And it's really a unique halacha and does need deeper and further understanding of how it exactly works. It's interesting, right after Pinchas does this heroic act of killing, he gets a very interesting thing. He gets the gift of shalom. He gets the gift of peace. So it would seem like a very ironic gift to give to someone who just did something very violent. He just killed two people, and we're giving him the gift of shalom, of peace. So that the simple answer, all the Mefarshim say, is that peace doesn't mean everyone is peace doesn't mean everyone's happy and everyone's doing what they want. Peace means Hashem has peace. So when Pinchas went and killed some money, that although that seems like a very violent act, that made peace with Hashem. Because in the eyes of Hashem, this was peace, this was shalom, this was wholesome, this was complete. We think of peace as, oh, everyone has to get along, and I have to tolerate everything and everyone, and I just have to keep quiet and smile and get along. Yes, sometimes, but that doesn't make shalom with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimate peace when Hashem is shalom, which means Kla Yisrael with Avinu Shev Hashemayim is one. We're following, we're doing, and we're connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's ultimate shalom. The Stipler says over that because kina, because kanoyis is really a stira to shalom, a kanoy means a zealot. The zealot gets up and kills people. He's not exactly going to be the most peaceful person in the neighborhood. So he says that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him shalom. Because sometimes doing an act of kanoyis can take away a little bit of your shalom. It can make you a little less compassionate. It can make you a little less sensitive. So therefore that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to overdose Pinchas with shalom. That's the famous line from Golda Meir was Mechavin to this vart. She said that I can never forgive the Arabs for turning us nice Jewish boys into murderers. She means this vart. She means Lamais. At the end of the day, the Jewish soldiers become desensitized to death. They gotta kill people. It takes a toll on you. It desensitizes your value system. And therefore, Zakta Tari, since Pinchas had to do this act of kinnis, which was a violent act, so that violent act made him somewhat violent. So therefore, the Tari had to overdose him with extra shalom to compensate to make him more of a loving person. I heard a pshat once, b'shem Rosh Hashiva, b'zalag epsing zatzal. His yard say it's not so far off. A beautiful pshat in this week's parasha. I never heard it b'shem him. I heard it b'shem a Talmud of his. He said over, now why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Pinchas reward right after the story? So he said over, because sometimes in life we don't know if what we did was right or wrong. You know, you did a very kanoyistic thing. Maybe Pinchas wasn't right. Maybe Pinchas shouldn't have done it. Maybe Pinchas should have stopped, you know, the act of znus and said, listen guys, this is wrong, stop it. Maybe death wasn't the answer. Therefore, Zogtib Zelig, that's why the Torah right away, Hashem said, no, Pinchas, you were right. And I'm going to reward you on the spot for it. That's why immediately following the act that Pinchas did, immediately Pinchas gets a reward. To show Pinchas and the world that what he did was 100% right. And Zelig said, we find a similar idea when it comes to Hanukkah. Zelig spoke about the famous Kasha from Bnei Yeshua. Why did we need the miracle of Hanukkah? I know it's the summertime, it's hard to imagine Hanukkah. But okay, it's not too far off. Frank, the famous Kasha of Bnei Yeshua, why do we even need the miracle of Hanukkah? We have a rule, Tumah Hotshu B'Tzibur. If everyone is Tameh and everything is Tameh, you could bring Shemin, that's Tameh. So why did we even need to have the miracle of oil of one jug that wasn't Tameh? We could have brought it with regular Tameh. So Abzali answered that the reason why Hashem made this miracle is to show us that you would have thought maybe we were wrong for what we did. Maybe the Nisyavnim were right. Maybe the Chashmonaim were wrong. Maybe we shouldn't have battled. Maybe we should have been more passive. Maybe we should have taken whatever the Yevanim were giving us and just be happy and not make a fight. That's why immediately after the story of Hanukkah, the Torah gave us a miracle. That's Hashem's way of saying, you did good. You were right. You did a good thing. So often in life when we do courageous things, we don't know if what we did was right or wrong. And therefore said Reb Zelig, that's why immediately following Pinchas, maybe Pinchas himself wasn't sure if he did the right thing. Maybe he was too zealous. Maybe he wasn't Lishma. Maybe he didn't have the right intentions. So immediately the Torah says, Pinchas, you're good. You did everything right. You did exactly what I wanted. I'm going to reward you on the spot for the amazing acts that you did. So kanoyis is a very, very tricky thing. It's like a dose of medication. It's got to be perfect. It's got to be just the right amount. It's got to go to the right person. To the wrong person, wrong amount. Not properly given can be really, really detrimental. They say over a beautiful word from the Abderov. We quoted him last Sunday. The Abderov said a pidrush. We mentioned the Abderov, the Oyv Yisrael. He loved Jewish people so much. So when he heard this halach, obviously he knows Pashup Shat in the Gemara, Kanoim Poigin Ba means you got to kill. The Kanoi has to kill him. So he said, Al pidrush Poigin comes from the Lashon of Pigia. Pigia means Tefillah. Said the Abderov, you know what a real Kanoi is? A kanoi is someone who sees a Jew sinning, you daven for him. You don't kill him with a knife, you don't kill him with a gun. You daven for him. You daven, I wish he would do tshuva, I wish he would find his way. You help him out, you make care of him, you bring him closer to Yiddishkeit. That's real pigia. That's curing. It's obviously not pshat in the drush. We know poikimba means you kill him, but such a beautiful pshat from the after of. Very often we see people that are sinning, so right away we want to kill them. We want to degrade them. Says him daven for them. Think about them. Maybe you can bring them closer to Yiddishkeit. Maybe they just need an embrace, a hug, you know, someone to care about them, something to think about them, something to acknowledge them. Don't ride them off so fast. And therefore, Kanoyis is a very, very, very tricky story. I say over a story with Reb Gifter, tells the Rosh Hashiva. Reb Gifter was a fiery speaker. Anyone's ever heard of Gifter? Speak to Reb Gifter. He's a very fiery, powerful speaker. So when Reb Gifter was ready in his youth, when he was in Europe, so he was in the town of Shadaf, and he spoke from the pulpit in one of the local shuls. And he was giving musa to the people of the town, and he told the people of the town, I want you to know that Chaim Nachman Bialik is not a Novi, he's not a tzaddik, he's not a good person. We're not going to get into the whole story about who the background to Chaim Nachman Bialik, a fascinating person, learned in the Volozhin Yeshiva. His days in Volozhin were interesting, but in any case, he didn't exactly live his life as a Volozhin Talmud. So Reb Gifter got up and was yelling at the Balabatim that you think that he's a Novi, you think he's the all end, you think he's the greatest thing to ever, he's not so great. And he got a lot of pushback from some of the Balabatim in the town. And they were not agreeing to him. They didn't like what he had to say. They thought that Bialik was very good. He was very important. And he got pushback from the people. And he held his ground. And he held his ground. He fought back with the Balabatim. And he got in a big fight with them. And he wasn't sure, did he do the right thing or not? And he came back to Yeshiva, his Rosh Yeshiva, his Rebbe, Zalman Bloch. Told him, you did good. Because that was good kanoyas. You took a stand on something. You did it right. You did a good thing. But there was a different story with Reb Gifter. Reb Gifter there was once an event in Europe that was not a Taridic event, and Reb Gifter wanted to break up the event. So he ran into the building screaming, fire, fire! And everyone ran out of the event, and ultimately the event was cancelled. When Reb Gifter came back to Yeshiva after that story, the Rabbeim were not very happy with him. They actually kicked him out of Beis Medrash. They made him learn in a side Beis Medrash for 3 days as a punishment. And they said, that's not the way you do kanois. So Reb Gifter was already mukhunach at a young age. What is proper kanois and what is not proper kanois? A person has to know when to wage a fight, when to wage a battle, when not to wage a fight, when not to wage a battle. Everything has to be measured so, so carefully. Kanois is a very, very tricky thing. The Chazon Ish used to have a line we used to say about kanoim that he thought were out of line. He used to say that they're kanoim koidim matan Torah. So what do you mean they're kanoim koidim matan Torah? So the Chazon Ish explained, it means they don't have a Torah to guide them how to do. Nebuch, you see people and you see groups, they're totally screaming and yelling, but they have no idea what they're screaming and yelling about. They're not guided by Torah. They're not guided by Das Torah. They're not guided by Gedolim. They get excited and they get all bent up about things and they run wild. So the Chazon Ish used to say about this group that they're kanoim koidim matan Torah. They have no leadership. They have no set of rules to follow, to mimic, to copy. They're completely out of control. They're completely lost. They have nothing to base it on. So kanoyis is something that we have to be very, very careful with. Something very tricky. Something that we have to be very careful about. There's a beautiful mashal I saw in the name of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Beautiful mashal. Now, Pinchas wasn't the only Jew who watched what happened with the Nasi, with Zimri and Cosby. It was open in public. Everyone saw. So a fellow once came to a young boy came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked him, "Nu, who do you root for? The Dodgers or the Yankees?" This was when the Dodgers were still in Brooklyn. I know you speak to old timers; it still bothers them. My wife's grandma told me it still bothers her that the Brooklyn Dodgers left and moved to LA. It bothers people. Okay. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked him, "Nu, who do you follow? You follow the Dodgers or you follow the Yankees?" So he told him that he follows the Dodgers. He told him, "Nu, when was the last time you were at a game?" So he said, "You know, the last time I went to a game was such a blowout. The Dodgers were losing. I left the middle of the game because there was a blowout. We left early." So the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked him, he said, "Did any of the players leave early?" So he said, "No, the players are not allowed to leave early. They're players." So he asked him, "So why did you leave early?" He said, "I'm a fan. I'm allowed to leave early. The players have to stay until the end." So the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, "You see from over here, there's a difference between a player and a fan. A player is someone who watches. He watches, he comes, he goes, he leaves. He's not directly affected or connected." He said, "But a player is someone who's directly connected, very involved." And the Lubavitcher Rebbe told him, and when he left him, he said, "I want you to remember for life, always be a player, don't just be a fan. I think it's exactly the lesson of Pinchas. Pinchas was a player instead of a fan. Everyone else just watched. Everyone else just took it in. Can you imagine today people would be taking selfies, they'd be posting on Instagram, but no one would do anything. You know, there's stories about people that are getting mugged and beaten up on the streets, and people just take video of it. They don't do anything about it. We're a generation of fans, but not players. Pinchas was the only one who stepped and said, I'm not just going to be a fan, I'm going to get involved. And the other person in Jewish history where we find this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Everyone walked by the burning bush and said, oh wow, cool, burning bush. Oh, let's take a selfie with the burning bush. Let's post it on Instagram. Hashtag burning bush. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who stopped and said, what is this burning bush? He stopped. It did something. Got involved. So I think this is such a beautiful message from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Don't just be a fan. Be a player. In life, it's very easy to sit on the sidelines and not get involved. You know, like we said from the Kliyarko, why do you want to get involved? People are going to make fun of you. People are going to say you're doing it for the wrong reason. So you say to yourself, you know what? I'm not interested. I'm just not going to get involved. Zok the Torah, that's not true. It's not good. You got to get involved. Get involved. You know, on the left, they have a line called silence is violence. Not saying something is dangerous. Yeah, it's true. Sometimes if you sit back and you don't do anything, it can be bad also. We find this similar side by the Chet HaEgel, that the Jewish people were held accountable for the Chet HaEgel, and not every single Jewish person bowed down to the Egel. But you know what they did? They watched. And they probably took selfies. They probably posted on Instagram. Wow, look what the crazy Jews are doing. They're bowing down to an Egel. And no one got involved. No one stopped them. No one said, guys, what are you doing? Everyone was just a bystander. Everyone was just a fan. No one was a player. So I think this Yisrael is such an important message throughout the parasha, this idea of getting involved, making a difference. You know, we can do much more than we think. Everyone says, nah, I can't make a difference, and what I do is not going to matter to anyone, and it's not going to work anyways. If everyone who had a good idea said, it's not going to work, we'd get nothing done in Klal Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, people have ideas, people are motivated, people are inspired, and they don't listen to the naysayers. My wife put me on the podcast from Rachel Fryer, I think her name is, the Chassidish woman who went to law school and is now a judge and is now running for, I think, Supreme Court. Fascinating interview with her. You should take a listen. Fascinating woman from her background, from where she came from, to where she is today. And she said that throughout her life, there were so many people who told her, you can't do this. There's no way you're going to be able to do this. You're a Chassidish woman. You're not going to go to law school. You're not going to become a lawyer. You're not going to become a judge. And all her life, all she heard was, no, 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 you can't, you can't, you can't. And she kept on saying, no, I'm doing this l'shma, I'm doing this l'shem shemayim, I want to do this. You know, to cover HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can get things done. It's very easy to be pushed down. It's much harder to push through all those that are pushing us away, all those that are telling us we can't do, because we can do a lot more than we think that we can't do. Okay, let's continue on. There's so much more to get to, and already it is a lot later than I wanted it. So, what happened? So Pinchas is given the gift of Shalom because he calmed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now here's where it gets interesting. Till now, we had no idea who the two villains were. We don't know who the man and the woman who were living together in public. We don't know who they were. All of a sudden, in the beginning of this week's parasha, we get name recognition. Who are they? V'shem Ish Yisrael. Who was the name of the man? Hamukod Avashit Asher Hukah Esamid Janis Zimri Ben Salun. Wow. He gets a whole title. And who's the lady? V'shem Ish Hamukah Midjanis. Who is the Midjanite woman? Kazbi Basur. She was a high-ranking woman in Midjan. So Frekti Arachayim HaKadosh, why all of a sudden now do they have names? And in last week's parasha, they don't have names. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, in last week's parasha, they didn't do the sin yet. It was attempted. So we don't want to, nothing is found guilty. We don't run their names. We don't ruin their names. He says, but over here, they did the crime. Now we can be mafarsim, and now we can say, these are the people who did a crime. I think it's an important lesson. So often before people are tried and found guilty of their crime, we run their names through the mud, and we tar and feather them, and then we find that, oh, we made a mistake. Oh, we were wrong. And now what? You can't take that back. Therefore, the Torah doesn't tell us who they are. We don't know yet. They didn't do anything. They were getting together. They were thinking about living together. They didn't do anything yet. Don't, no guilt yet. Now, after they were found guilty, so now already we can teach a lesson that what? That we have to know who they are because they did an aveira. But Moshe Feinstein says it a little differently. Moshe Feinstein says, because if we would have had their names in last week's parasha, someone might have said to themselves, wow, a Nasi is living with a non-Jewish woman. I can do it also. It's good enough for the rabbi. It's good enough for me. It would almost have led people to think that it's okay for such behavior. So we don't say who it is. Then we come to this parasha, the Torah is saying, no, 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 even the Nasi is not above the law. Even the Nasi has to abide by the law. He has to keep the Torah mitzvahs. And if he doesn't, he will find the same punishment that all the other Jewish people have. Now, what is interesting over here is that Pinchas comes from Shevet Levi. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKayin. Aaron HaKayin comes from Amram. Amram comes from Levi. Where does Zimri come from? Zimri is Nesi Beisavla Shemayni. Comes from Shimon. Now it's interesting, Shimon and Levi were very similar brothers, a little bit. They both had a little bit of an aggressive side, and they both attacked and conquered, and they killed out Shechem for what happened with their sister. So many Mepharshim point out over here that Shimon was a little different than Levi. Levi produced a generation of Pinchases. Shimon produces a Zimri. So where did Shimon go wrong? Some Mepharshim point out that maybe Shimon was not as Lishma, or didn't have the same pure intentions as Levi. He was a little bit more vild, he was a little more controlled, that led perhaps to what we have in this week's parasha, where someone from the Shevet of Shimon can go so off and so make such a colossal mistake and do such a horrific avera. Okay. Now, let's keep going a little bit more in the psukim. Again, it's getting already late. So then we have in the psukim, we have right after that, we have the counting of the Jewish people. And if you go through the countings, you'll find something very, very interesting. If you look in the countings, the Torah tells us in Perek Chavah Pasuk Mem Aleph, the Torah tells us of Sheva Binyamin. How many children did Sheva Binyamin have? So the Torah tells us Binyamin had 45,600. That's Binyamin's family. Now Dan had a much, much larger, much, much larger family. He had 64,000. So the Chafetz Chaim says such another Yisoy to live by. Says the Chafetz Chaim, the Gemara tells us that Binyamin had 10 sons. Don had one son who was deaf. Therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, if you had to take bets, if you had to roll statistics on who would have a larger family, you think the larger family would come from Binyamin or the larger family would come from Don? So if you were a betting man, if you gambled properly, you'd say, come on, Binyamin's got 10 boys. He's going to have 10 boys. They're all going to have 10 boys, 10 boys, 10 boys, 10 boys. You know, it's going to be a very large mishpacha. Don had one son, and the one son was somewhat handicapped. So what do you think he's going to produce? Zokhtu Chavetz Chaim, look at the numbers. Don had 64,000. Binyamin only had 45,000. It's not about statistics. It's not about gambling. It's not about betting. It's about what Hashem wants. You can have one person who can have an amazing mishpacha. A person can have a few children. A person can have a large mishpacha. We have no idea. Says the Chavetz Chaim, it's not about statistics. It's not about what makes sense to us. It's about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has plan for everyone, and anything is possible no matter what the numbers seem to show. Another ha'ara, which is also worth mentioning, which the Ramban talks about as a Meshech Chachma, if you look at all the Shvatim, one of the Shvatim that have perhaps the lowest number is Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi has a significantly lower number than all of the other Shvatim. The Ramban says something also very important. And again, these are some mamish lessons for life to me, in my opinion. Ramban writes, you know why Shevet Levi has such a smaller family? Because Shevet Levi, at the end of the day, did not suffer during Shibud Mitzrayim. The Pasuk says that based on the suffering, Hashem says, I will give you, you'll multiply. Shevet Levi didn't suffer as much. So since Shevet Levi didn't suffer, they didn't merit to have as large of a family. It's an interesting idea. Sometimes people say, you know, why don't I have suffering? Or someone is suffering. You say to yourself, oh, that person is suffering. I feel so bad for him. You don't know what that suffering is leading. Maybe that is a mechaber for something else. Maybe that's going to give him bracha in another area. Writes the Ramban, Shevet Levi had it easier in Mitzrayim, and that ultimately was why they had a smaller size tribe, less children, and less people. Then perhaps what I really wanted to get to in this week's parasha, was the story of the Bnei Slavchad. To me, that's like the highlight of the parasha. These fantastic, amazing girls. What a group of girls. These five girls were amazing. How they were so bold and brave and choyviv Eretz Yisrael. How much they loved Eretz Yisrael. They wanted so badly to have a chaylik in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says they were chavivim es haaretz. If you take a look in the Kliyaka points out a beautiful Kliyaka over here where he talks about the chaviv es haaretz. This we've spoken about many times. Women's specific chaviv es haaretz versus men's chaviv es haaretz. And the Bnei Slavchad said, we don't want to lose out. Lama nigara. Why should we lose out? We want to also be able to have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. And they file a complaint. And they march to Beis Din. They go into Beis Din and they tell Moshe Rabbeinu, why should we lose out? Lama nigara. Avinu meis b'midbar. Our father died in the desert. He wasn't part of Kerech. He wasn't a bad guy. He died because of his own sin. He didn't have any sons. Why should we lose out? So we see again an amazing Mesiras Nefesh on the part of these girls. where they did not want to lose out. They loved Eretz Yisrael. They loved being connected. They loved doing what's right. They didn't want to be disconnected. They didn't want to be left out just because they were girls and not boys. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do. And the Chafetz Chaim says the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do was because he became a negei b'davar. The moment he heard that they weren't part of Kairach, Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, "Oh, they were. Your dad was on my side." Says the Chafetz Chaim, he had to take a step back. He said, "I can't be involved in such a thing anymore. I'm already negei b'davar. Your father was on my side. Your father was in my camp. Your father was on my court. I now have to be neg. I have to step back." But this idea of the Bnei Slavcha, the great Noshim Tzidkanias, the women who want to do the right thing, they say over an amazing story of the city of Brisk. The Brisker Rav was the Rav in Brisk. They had a choir in the main shul in Brisk. And they wanted to change the choir. They wanted the choir, instead of standing in a semicircle, they wanted the choir to be moved to the balcony. And the Brisker Rav said, "Absolutely not. This is too modern. This is too much change. I want the choir to stay in a semicircle. They cannot move to the balcony." However, like very often in many shuls, the rabbi is not always listened to, and the board did what the board wanted to, and they had the choir on the balcony. And the Brisker Rav came into the shul, and he saw this, and he said, "Absolutely not, we are not davening like this, this is unacceptable. This is not what I want, this is not das Torah, this is not halacha, we need to change it." And they didn't listen. And they said, "No, rabbi, you're voted down. The board said we're doing it." And all of a sudden, from the ladies section came the screams and the yells, "No! If the rabbi said no, it's no!" And every man knows that when his wife tells him that, he listens. So the women in Brisk stood up for the Brisker Rav and his covet and his halachic opinion, and they yelled out from the mechitzas, "No, this is wrong. You have to go back to the way the Brisker Rav wanted. You have to follow tradition. We have to put the choir back in the semicircle and away from the balcony." So again, still the great Kayach of the Noshim, they're still fighting. They're still battling. They're still holding ground for what is important, for what is sacred, to all the values that we have and that we should keep very dear to our heart. What else do we have over here? Okay, I think we'll leave it at that. That some of the takeaways from the parasha is definitely building relationships, being very careful in how we deal with each other, not being bystanders, getting involved, making a difference. As the Lubavitcher Rebbe said so beautifully, we have to become more players and less fans. Okay, everybody.